You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Axe to Grind, the Orlando, Bob, where are you at?
Point Pleasant,
and Queens, New York, hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
And I'm Tom.
And we come to you today from parts unknown, points divergent.
One of us is using a microphone. It's up to you by the end of the podcast to figure out who it was.
Yeah, listen, everybody. We want to give you... Oh, no. Bob just turned into a ghost. A digital ghost.
Bob turned into a drunk ghost. What happened?
What are you talking about? I wasn't even talking.
It's haunted. Everybody, we felt the obligation to bring you the hardcore reality. So even from these disparate locales, we are doing the damn thing. Who are we giving a shout out today as far as our sponsors go?
Tom, you are on sound duty. So I'm going to say the sponsor's name and you give us a good sound, whatever sound that might be. Are you ready?
Yes.
Run for Cover Records. Check out that Young Gov LP. To Live a Lie Records. Check out that Spy Habitual Offender. It's shipping now.
Oh, yeah.
Closed Casket Activities. Everybody's on that shit. Closed Casket Activities.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody got to check everything out that they're doing. But that Vane FM record, you guys seen the thing with the drummer and the drummers? Anyways, you got to see them on live because they got some wild stuff happening right now. Check out the LP with Closed Casket. And last, but... definitely not least, Death Wish Inc. Who Trey's putting out vibes that the new Frail Body LP is going to be on some like album of the year type shit. So I'm very curious to hear that. Thank you to all our sponsors. We'll get them later. Go order stuff from them. Tell them we sent you. Guys, how we doing? How we feeling?
I'm
tidy motherfucker.
It's 90 degrees and it's Orlando. Everybody, you might hear the legitimate sounds of Orlando, and that's because I'm in a school parking lot. It's the only place I could find that was quiet.
Dude's
gonna
be arrested.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's actually a closed school, so I'm trespassing on two levels right now. So, at any rate,
Do you think that's how it works? That like you shouldn't be trespassing on a school and you shouldn't be trespassing in a closed down place, so you're doubling down? I think you get double jeopardy. You're fine.
No. Tom will tell you. I think this is charges on charges.
I'm pretty sure me and you have gone the exact same amount of law school, so we'll leave it all to Tom.
I've watched an incredible amount of Law and Order. So
me too.
Pat, you sound good. I just want you to know you sound really good.
Yeah, are you being sincere? I can't tell.
No, you're coughing like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Listen,
Your audio fidelity is fine, but the coughing is weary.
I have not been well. People that have seen us can attest to this. I have not been well in probably 2.5 weeks because going to bed at 2 a.m. every night to wake up at 8 a.m. to immediately drive. And spend all of your time hey, everybody, this is me bitching about tour. Spending all your time going from like very specific types of mini biomes. So like hotel rooms that have like are either super dry or you think a hotel room, oh, it's super dry. I'm going to wake up with that weird cough thing going on. But
yep.
I'll tell you, there's nothing more disturbing than a wet hotel room. which I've had twice on this tour. Look, to our listeners that are with their families, everybody cover your ears, cover your children's ears for 1 second. We had one hotel room that was so pungent of cum that I seriously gagged, and cum doesn't bother me. It's not like a disgusting smell, but like when it's thick, when I feel like it's like I'm moving through the miasma of cum, it's not good. So
it's like that part in WandaVision, like when she's trying to get into the real world.
Yes, that was the cum world for me.
Right.
And it was very terrible. Anyway, point is, I haven't felt good in a long time. I thought I had COVID, but then I took the test. I got no COVID. So I'm just a sick little dude, you know?
Yo, let me throw my theory out right now. This is science fact, I guess.
Science.
Yo, everyone is sick right now. Like,
that's true.
Like, with whatever it is, there's some stuff going on, but also the world's opening up. Yo, everybody's immune system's been weak. This is doctorate level zero here.
No, but it makes sense.
But you know, yeah, right. Just on a basic level, I think everybody's kind of cross contaminating. And Patrick, I just traveled too, and I was like, oh, you know what? I think for people who are traveling, this is also even more severe because you're entering places. Like, we all had our own, you know, think about this, the level of modern convenience travel that it used to happen was constant. So we were all sharing these little drug ecosystems, illness ecosystems. And now we aren't, but now we are again. And so I think you're just, it's a real battle of the wills, and you're on the front line.
And okay. Patty no days off either.
Yeah, no. Tomorrow is our first day off, and it's a 14-hour drive. Not first day off. It's our first day off in like 2 weeks, and it's a 14-hour
drive. Off on Monday, bro.
Yeah, you know what? We were always the type that even when we had days off, we would fill them. And I guess we'll probably still continue to do that for some time. But it is getting tempting when you're down bad, when you're sick as fuck. It is tempting to be like, yeah, can we maybe just hang in the hotel room for an entire fucking day? But that we haven't had that occasion on this tour. Nice. It does,
sounds
right?
Nice.
ESPN, take out the whole
dude. I'm
thing.
Doing that all weekend.
Yes.
Although, I think all three of us will say ESPN in the hotel room, especially if you're by yourself. Yo, that's the vacation. That's it.
I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, although, fellas, I you can tell me because you're more plugged in on the sports world than I am. Is ESPN ass now? It really feels like not near. Like, I used to look forward to an ESPN hotel evening, and now I'm
No, they go to the baseball channel.
No, so exactly the specialty sports channels are the way to go now because they actually get all the highlights, and ESPN has been severely limited by them, so they have these like drip drafts of highlights and then lots of talk on like, well, you know, Chris Webber tweeted and let's get some talking heads. And
and if you nap enough, you will wake up at the same point in the same ESPN Sports Center like four times. And you're like, oh cool, Oklahoma State beat fucking OU 54-42. Got it.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like a bookie.
Right.
I know every score. I go, what's the action on Gonzaga? I got everything.
Yeah. So tour has otherwise seemingly been very good. Is this right, Patrick?
Yeah, actually, it's been lit as hell. Thank you to anybody that came out.
I came out.
You did come out. I appreciate you very much, Tom.
I
apologize that I big-timed you by having to piss.
You big time, outside the venue.
Wait. What's the story?
Tom was like, yo, let's meet up. I was like, yeah, okay. And I round the corner, he's there. And I was like, all right, Tom, I got to pee.
Yeah,
like, pee so bad.
Damn.
Yeah, like, I'm on Myrtle Avenue in fucking Bushwick, and I'm talking to my buddy Brendan, who I'm at the show with. And I quite honestly, and this is full transparency, I like Pat. I'm friends with Pat. And I like Bob. Yeah. So like if I happen to be in Bob's like general area, I'd be like, hey buddy, like I'm down the street, come hang if you can. You know, like I'd love to see you. Because we're actually friends on this thing. So I was like, oh, he's in town. Maybe I'll see him. You know, he thankfully got us in because it was a sold out concert on a Saturday night in Brooklyn.
Woo!
You know, fucking 600-700 kids in Brooklyn, no big deal. I couldn't. I went in there. I was like, I felt like I was in like a fucking in a John Hughes movie. It felt like it was fucking 16 candles in a mosh pit. But yeah, so Pat turns the corner in his fucking bright yellow fucking safety vest or whatever the fuck.
His high viz.
Yeah. And he goes, oh, hey, Tom. And I'm like, hey, buddy. So I introduce him to my friend Brendan or whatever, whatever. And we talk for like 3 minutes. And he goes, I really got to pee, man. And I'm like, okay. And then he's like, I'll catch you in there. He did.
Wow.
Listen.
I think he gave me like the finger guns and like that, like when he left.
There's
me,
no
I was
finger
like,
guns.
Fuck this guy, man. Like,
listen. Wow. When I got to piss. And that extends to anybody that I just walked by. I'm not big timing anybody out here. I just,
you know what Pat did? Pat did the way, like, he, you know, like when you see like a famous person and they don't want to be, they don't want to interact. They like look, but they're not focused anywhere. They're just like ahead.
Good move.
That's what Pat did to me.
Damn.
So he's like, and then if you know, like, you know, like, you know, like, if you know a famous dude like that, or a famous woman that doesn't want to be bothered, then you have to like kind of be like, hey, we're friends. I've known you since grammar school kind of shit. You have to like step in their gate. That's what I had to do to Pat. Yep. He was just like, I'm not looking at any of these fucking people. I'm just trying to get to my backstage area.
Damn.
I would not.
Apparently
they
were
like
chicken. There was like, it was like a chicken coop, the backstage area.
Yeah, no, it was, I'm sure we talked about this on the last episode. What room you got to fill to get a real green room? What size room is it? Just let me know and I will become that. I will become that big. I will make sure the band becomes big enough that we can have a reliable green room night to night.
I think you're in that general vicinity, but not in New York.
You need more rap parts. More.
Apparently, I'm in some fucking dungeons on this shit. And we're filling decent sized rooms. And it's like, I cannot believe the places that like, look, respect to the places that had us, particularly respect to the promoters. But let me say, if there's like bare minimum.
Yeah, can I get a coat of paint? Can I get a coat of paint?
No, I don't need a coat of paint. I need light. we've played two venues where the green rooms had like the type of light. It was a Saw movie. You know what I mean? Like there was no fucking light, and I just don't understand. Like. One dude on the last tour, actually, that was the Citizen tour. Citizen had the good sense to just go, hey, brother, can we just give you a couple dollars to go get a light bulb? Is that a thing we can do?
Wow.
And like, you know, dude did come back with a light bulb and figured it out. But like, it's wild that any venue would be like, hey, I know what a band wants. They want to put things down and then never find them again because that's how dark the room is. That's what they want. They're like, yo, you have one job. You got one job.
Right,
like, I know you think it's to sell alcohol, but it's actually
to make sure me feel good.
To make Patrick feel validated.
Now, do you think here's a way that we can rectify this?
Mm.
And this is my question for you. Do we need more people in the biz, whether it be musicians, you know, merch people? Owning venues.
Good question.
So I would have said yes, but some of the more brutal venues I've played, it goes both ways. I've played I've played artist-owned venues that are very, they're down. They get it and all that. And then I've played artist-owned venues where you know, I don't want to, I'm not in anybody's pocket. I'm not trying to like tell people how to run their business, but it feels like maybe the, you know, $6,000 to $12,000 that you might need for a build out of some type is just that's not on the docket this year. You know what I mean? That's not going to happen this year. So like, it goes both ways. In principle, yes, because everybody would understand. Oh, hey, the green room. So you need a means to get to the stage. that doesn't send you through the crowd. That seems like very 101, right? But then
a lot of places do not have that.
I would say 65% of places do not have that.
I mean, like, one of I've gone to St. Vitus and watched very famous people walk from the downstairs backstage area, like through the, like, you know, fucking Milo's walking by me to get to the stage.
Right.
Yeah. And here's the thing. You guys can be honest with me. I will take no exception to whatever you say. Am I a little too high on myself that I feel like having to navigate, I'm not like the dude that just pushes people out of the way. So my, like, excuse me. Like, is that, that's like not the best vibe, right? That's
no, it's very, like, as a man of larger carriage who takes up more room to get through that space, that shit sucks. It's fucking really sucks. Annoying. It's really annoying. A person who, you know what? None of my bands are as big as Pat's, as big as Drug Church is right now. I can say that. There's
right now.
I mean, you're as big as any band I've ever been in, easily, by a long shot. We're not drawing fucking 500 people anywhere.
No, but I think, I honestly think that in most Precious Blood's moment, you were steady as a wind. So far as I could tell, you could tell stories about, like, oh, there's 40 people at this show and blah blah blah. But I think honestly, you were steady going for like longer than a lot of the bands in that scene. And I know you exited that band before they kind of entered their monster truck phase. But like, I would say steady going. Anyway,
but my point being, even like as someone who doesn't play often now, there is nothing worse in the world than not having somewhere to just like hang out.
Yeah.
Like, listen, to be like, I'm posted up at like the merch area, or just like kind of walking around. We played a festival years ago. One of our first show, well, early show back, and the backstage area is being used for a music video. So literally our like where we sat for like 6 hours in the bleach, like the blaring sun, was the back of Bago's car leaning on a Johnny pump, like a fire hydrant.
Yeah. Listen,
wow. Not our best performance when we finally got up there. FYI.
Well, here's the thing.
At sunstroke. It was fucking terrible. Yeah.
If the van feels like a better alternative green room,
that's terrible.
You're doing something wrong. You know what I mean? Cause I was just in the van for 7 hours. So like, and it's not because I love it. So if you're in that space, you're doing something wrong. And look, I don't want to sound ungrateful, because I appreciate all the venues that had us. And sometimes it just literally is what it is. But if we're just here kvetching, I could make some lists.
Here's my question, Pat. Here's my another question for you. I've been in the YouTube van life build out kind of thing going on.
Ooh, nice.
Do you think DC is at a point that they could maybe, you know, get a Sprinter, fucking build it out and make it, you know, a green room that is consistent, whether it be in Oklahoma City or Miami or LA or.
Well, this is not a flex of any type. For anybody that's listening, Bob and Tom are very kind about Drug Church. But as I tell people all the time, if it takes you 10 years to get to the place that you're marginally, like you're making the income of like a 26-year-old, it's, you know, take it with a grain of salt. I'm not trying to flex on anybody by having like a tiny moment where people like my band. So, all this is to say, our guarantees, are getting nicer. So, Tom, to that question, it's conceivable. However, I would probably rather be uncomfortable and take the money.
Okay, yeah, that's like, fair. That's totally fair.
I think that type of, I've talked to a great many band people who are like, yeah, listen, my comfort is worth every fucking dollar. I know a band that shouldn't be in a bus anymore. They still ride a bus everywhere. And it's not because, like, it's not to flex. It's just because they're like, you can't go backwards. If you go backwards, you just, your back hurts. You feel like a, you feel like a schlub. It's just a bad feeling.
your mental right. state might be really rough if we're touring in the bus and now you're in a 15 passenger.
Right. Going home like, to your, like, yeah.
Dude, day three might be really rough where you're like, oh my God, what the fuck am I doing? Damn.
Right. You know,
or you'd rather just go home to your six roommates, but like be torn in a fucking, you know,
yes.
a big ass bus.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, can we?
You heard it here. Pat is on the next Drug Church tour. Is a bus tour.
No, definitely no bus.
You need to have a generator outside and water chilled to the artist's discretion.
Yo, I'd be happy just to get enough water. Water apparently is part of our supply chain problems is water at the moment. Because I feel like I'm not getting nearly enough. All right, enough bitching about that. Can we talk about Kevin Seconds getting too real on Maine?
Let's talk about it. So set the stage. The ambush begins. Go ahead.
Okay. So Kevin Seconds, a gentleman that we've talked about a great deal. We probably talk about 7 Seconds more than any other podcast going. And
reverence, love, and respect for 7
yes.
Seconds.
Yeah, and for a lot of reasons that we've enumerated many times, but a big part of it is that for a number of years, it just didn't feel like they were getting the love that they deserve as not just a one of the seminal sort of hardcore punk bands, but also a truly great band for many records. So we've gone through it, but Kevin at one time was like top tier performer. I couldn't speak to it now. I haven't seen like, you know, he's an older gentleman. I haven't seen the 7 Seconds lineup, but literally the dude that cared how he sounded. Do you know what I'm saying? Which is like not normal for a lot of hardcore vocalists. So shout out to him. But he is doing a tour right now. I think it might be a rotating opener or not opener support for Circle Jerk. Is that correct?
It's Negative Approach.
It's Negative Approach.
Okay, so that is, in my view, a really great tour, but I have literally no idea how it's doing. I don't know what the interest is. I have to imagine that the majority of people coming out are, you know, 38 plus, you know?
Used to be doing quite well.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
Like selling out places. They're doing 2 nights at Irving Plaza in the city.
Okay, yeah. So that makes what I'm about to say now even more interesting, I think. Which is Kevin Seconds on his Instagram just had a caption that was very vulnerable, which was just, I think I want to go home. And it wasn't on some bitter shit. It was on some, I'm tired and physically uncomfortable and would like to be in the company of my wife.
Yeah.
It's sort of shit. And it was a very, too honest. Like if I'm going to, you know, RIP to John Joseph's Instagram, which I understand got banned recently.
So, don't worry, he has 2 or 3 others legitimately. Yes. So.
But here's my point is the world, the social media world wasn't built for 50 plus year old men. That's just what it is, right? Like some of them can use it better than others, but truthfully, it's not built necessarily for me. It's built for people that are slightly younger than me and probably all the way down to children now, right? But like 50 plus, you start to struggle a little bit. And
he spent his 61st birthday on tour.
Yes.
And his 30th wedding anniversary.
Yeah. Which, by the way, shout out to both those things. When I saw that it was his 30th.
Incredible.
That's incredible. A deep respect for that. Back to the point, he just got very open. And I don't want to say there's something wrong with it. I just want to say that it's like, you have to, like John Joseph, I feel like, you know, he's bitched about shit in a way that's not flattering before on occasion, but for the most part, I think he understands he's going to get banned at some point. You know what I mean? And meanwhile, I don't know if Kevin Seconds understands that like being vulnerable in that space, in my view, as a guy who has had every type of relationship with the internet, I think it's never really very good. You don't got to be a rock. You don't got to be like a hard man all the time, but I think letting people know that you are at all bothered or at all sad or whatever is, I don't want to use unbecoming, because then our listeners that like get very deep on the internet are going to feel like I'm clowning them. But I just feel like,
isn't it appropriate for him though to do this of anybody?
Well, you know what? He's been earnest for 40 years. so yeah, if anybody, maybe him, but I'm just saying that like I told somebody this, I was talking to somebody about this and they said, damn, that's not a good energy for getting people to your show. I said, yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it. And maybe I'm just in showman mode. You know what I mean? Maybe I should be like a little bit more vulnerable, but like, to me, it's just kind of a like, oh yeah, you know, like save that for the wife, save that for the diary. You know what I mean? Like you don't gotta tell total strangers.
No, I got a question for the room on that, because I think we, the three of us collectively on a personal level, have entered an interesting place with our social media usage, you know?
And I mean, sure, mine is at an all-time low.
Well, right, yeah, which is a good thing. But even that, I mean, our participation in terms of like posting, it's almost purely promotional and or things we're doing, less irreverence and less like actual stuff to interact with. Do you think is that an accurate thing to say?
100% on my part. And
Tom, how do you feel about it?
No, I think so. Yeah, and I think it's become a cesspool, and I think he's probably new enough to it that he doesn't realize like the darkness that is actually out there.
Well, and he's using it right. Like you're 100% right. He's using it in this kind of like.
How it was.
No, yeah, well, it's like an innocent, yes, naive, sure, honest way, which, like, to be real, like, let's call a spade in the best possible light. Those things all describe a certain element of Kevin Second's appeal, right? Is that, like, this is a dude who's honest on main, who's bearing his emotions, and was pretty unafraid to do so throughout 7 Seconds career of like, yeah, you know what? I'm feeling like a new wind now, you know, let's go praise. Let's go, you know, and right. So credit to him keeping that same energy, but you're not wrong. Also, it's tough. It's tough to see people go through that and put it online. And especially when the online culture has just become LOL, GTFO,
right.
You know?
Right. Like, old man it. Sad. Like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
But I think I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No.
I mean, if this was John Brandon being like, fuck this, I want to go home to Detroit, you'd be like, yo, man, hope he's all right. But I feel like from the get-go, from any experience I've ever had with the person, with his music, with his live shows, with everything, like, he's a pretty open dude. And to be 61, married for 30 years, I'm like, haven't been home for that. You know, you've always been home for those milestones in the last probably 15 years or so. And now you're not. And this is a fucking long-ass tour. I thought Patrick's tour was long.
Yo, this is like a two-month tour.
You got nothing on Keith Morris, my man.
Shout out to Keith Morris. As long as it's not off, I'm good with him.
Dude, I mean, the tour started March 17th, and it's, I mean, it's off and on. It goes through April 30th or May 1st. So, I mean, for a bunch of 60-something-year-old human beings out there, from March 17th through May 1st, and then there's another, Jesus. Like, West Coast leg for another, like, 3 weeks.
Jesus.
Ugh. Like, that's impressive.
Now you got to figure, is this being billed as a kind of a goodbye to Circle Jerks, or like I don't really
know. It's just a like punk mega powers tour, you know what I mean?
And yeah, like they've had reissues done.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's a big part of it. Both bands.
I will say this, and Circle Jerks, yo, merch for these bands, fucking fire. 7 Seconds merch, like I might need to go to the show just to buy some of the 7 Seconds shirts. They're so good. There's this one that's just the like classic 7 Seconds logo repeating down the front, different colors. It looks so good. I'm impressed. So shout out to whoever did that. Circle Jerks merch looks really good too. Negative Approach, I don't even know. Their merch shouldn't be nothing except the white t-shirt with the 7-inch cover on it. But yeah, like, it all looks good. It's big shout out to that.
They did cancel their Jersey show though.
Oh, they did.
They canceled Vermont. I think Jersey, Boston, and Philly because Keith Morris has COVID.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and then they're like, hey, you know, the openers are struggling. You know, the openers, Negative Approach and 7 fucking seconds. You know, like, so if you want to buy, like, these, like, signed tour posters to help them through, like, these days off, I'm like.
That's what that was? Oh, my God. Oh, man, we should book, we should maybe Axegrind needs to present a Negative Approach 7-second show. Come on. Somebody get on that. Yeah, so
in summation, he swank.
Yeah, I know. Come on, Short Style Punk Night. In summation, yes, it's a little too much on Maine, but I wouldn't have that. I would never, ever, ever ask that dude to change for the sake of the ugliness that social media culture is.
I agree.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, Ernest is his vibe and his appeal, and you're either with it or not. And at this point, yeah, listen, let's give him credit. He lives on planet Earth. Maybe he knows. I'm just, you know what? Why maybe I'm being a bit sensitive about this? I'm not going to repeat it. I just saw something very ugly a short time ago about somebody in our community where somebody's in a bad way, and the top comment was something that would get your face kicked in, and it was like, oh, somebody's always got to say something negative as fuck.
Yep. You know what
I mean? Yeah. Like, dear listeners, DM me. I will not know what Pat is talking about.
I'll tell you when we're off.
Yeah, you're not going to, and then I'm going to get DMs and texts. Like, what's Pat mean? I got 17. What's the fun band that Pat's going on tour with next?
Oh, right. Yeah.
I'm your PR guy.
I'm glad people care. That's nice.
Yeah, cool. You're welcome.
Yo, I got a question for you guys. So one of the ideas that I'm pitching, but we didn't really have proper time for us to air it out, is let's rack our brains. We've had a lot of ideas. We had a lot of opinions that we've put out here. Where we were wrong, and I think that's always fun. It's always fun. Just a life lesson. It's fun to self-evaluate. If you do that enough, these dickheads in the street can't do it to you because you already did it to yourself. So,
right, it's like 8 Mile, like when Eminem points out all the shit that's fucked up about his life.
Yeah.
And then the guy is like, oh, I can't say anything. You already said everything.
Boom. So, we're going to do that soon. But in the spirit, I wanted to throw one out because I had a conversation with a friend a couple weeks ago where we kind of got to this point, and it's relevant to have this. I think we've talked about this. We actually talked about how we thought melodic hardcore was kind of on an upswing. And I don't think we were totally wrong. We've definitely seen a few bands who are a little more on the melodic side tick up or kick up a little more interest. One Step Closer being one of them. Praise has their new LP coming out on Rev, and I think people are pretty hyped on that. And there's a good grip of other bands doing that. But outside of One Step Closer, we haven't seen like a big sweep and an uptick in that stuff. Rather, we've seen a big sweep and uptick in like faster, chaotic hardcore, which I'm not mad at all. But where we have seen the popularity swell is in the adjacent world. And that is almost undeniable, I think. And it's not like we haven't talked about that being like, hey, yeah, this stuff, you know, seems to be gaining ground. My question to you guys is the adjacent world of hardcore adjace, is it not a separate lane, but actually the evolution of where a lot of mainstream hardcore is going?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
I feel I'm not going to excuse myself from the conversation, but I feel like there's going to be a lot of bias.
Well, so you're I want to put it out there for both of you guys. We are seeing, and we talked about it a few weeks ago, and I Tom, you might have got some feedback on this too. I got a like shit ton. The clean cut hardcore, like fastball hardcore kid. 12 years ago, we would have said it was a Bridge 9 kid. Maybe 9 years ago, we would have said it's a Triple B kid. Even 5 years ago, yeah, maybe we would have said just a Triple B kid. That person doesn't really totally exist anymore in the numbers that they did. And we sort of opined and said,
"That's I can tell you from being out here right now, that's very, very true." Right. That is like that person is, and look, for people,
well,
that
they're on the they're on the endangered species list, whereas the youth crew is like on the like extinct, like almost extinct list, right?
Yeah, but hold on, Bob, for our listeners who are perception impaired and struggle with some shit, maybe explain that we don't mean that Triple B's not hot. We don't we don't mean that Bridge 9 couldn't put out a good record now. What we mean is there was a look and a type of person who was
a collared, right, a plaid collared shirt.
Yep.
High and tight. Haircut. Not a ton of facial hair.
Nope. Soft. Maybe they have sort of fashionable jeans, or
right,
could be wearing cargo shorts. If they aren't wearing the button down, they might have a band shirt that has a live photo on the back. You know what I mean? And Patrick's right. Those things were just associated with those labels and this and that, you know. And there's been a lot of different iterations and eras. In fact, when you look at Triple B, doing just as well as it ever has, but you look at some of the hottest acts on Triple B, all on the harder side of hardcore. So
that's right. That's the relevant point to me. That's the part that like is worth hammering. These are still Triple B acts, but if you compare, and it might honestly be the same kid. That would be an interesting question. Is it
well,
the same
no. Well,
kid?
So here's the thing. It could be, but as they get older, they get into different things. So it you see some of that graduation into a harder sound, or just a drifting that way kind of stream of things. We're seeing that realm, but I think all three of us can acknowledge there is a certain brand of hardcore kid who might dabble with that, but that's never going to be their main course. They might order that as a side, but that's not their meal. And what I'm saying is there's never going to be the numbers on people who make that their meal are never the same as the numbers who made the like the mainstream, mainline, fastball pitch, hardcore kid into just strictly heavy, hard, like, crowd kill style hardcore, you know?
Do you think everyone's just meeting in the middle?
I don't. I think that it's drifted. I think, and it's the reason I ask is because I think it's kind of this interesting question. I think there's been some gravitational pull putting our friend out on Maine. Pat Flynn, singer of Half Heart. Half Heart is a perfect description of a
clean cut band.
Clean cut. This is the fastball pitch mainstream hardcore band. They're fast enough for hardcore kids. They have mosh parts. They have the big sing-alongs. Da da da. But you know, that's a great example of that kind of a band. He sings for Fiddlehead now. And Fiddlehead, we all could sit here and call them hardcore or not hardcore, but they certainly fit more in the weird hardcore adjacent category that we've developed. In a post-title fight world, in a post/living-in-turnstiles world, hardcore's bent. And I'm not saying it's worse off. I think it's interesting. And it's like, we've talked about a hardcore adjacent stuff as a separate, like, uncanny valley at different points. But I think that that's now the main line. And it has become the evolution when previously we had seen it as, you know, maybe we were, you know, the Cro-Magnons, and this is, you know, Homo sapiens come along. And the first handful of Homo sapiens, you're like, oh, look at those weird things. Huh. And now everybody's a Homo sapien. And we're like, oh, shit, that's what it is. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. And in fact, we are seeing more and more of this blending and crossbreed and like bands who 15 years ago, it would be kind of like, oh, are they a hardcore band? Sonically, it's a little more melodic, or it has more rock elements, or it's a little more developed style wise. But now it's like, nah, that's where we're at right now.
So yeah, I guess that's what I meant by like,
thoughts. Yeah.
I think that's kind of what I meant by like meeting in the middle, because like there are almost like no more like blank kids for the most part. Like first thing that when you mentioned that, the first thing that came to my mind was that No Pressure and Tsunami are doing a European tour.
Yes.
Lifetime wasn't taking out Bulldoze.
Perfect. Yes, correct.
So I think like, you know, or like, you know, like Pain of Truth is playing like this like giant festival in Texas. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you know, there's like a hardcore day, a rap day, or no, there's a rap stage, a hardcore stage, and like a pop punk stage. But like they're playing with like Newfound Glory and this and that, like that wouldn't have happened 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I think like,
well,
there's a mixture of like people like Saves the Day and like fucking Earth Crisis, where there were times that that didn't really exist.
Well, and perhaps even something that we're saying is that the canon of being a hardcore kid has never been broader, you know, because you're right. Like now I bet all three of us, Tom, you're someone who likes Saves the Day and Earth Crisis, I'm assuming.
That's correct.
Patrick liked Earth Crisis. I liked Saves the Day. There were intersections. Tom, you're in the Venn diagram. You're in the intersection. But that was a perhaps exception. And now it's sort of just like, yeah, man, like you might not love Earth Crisis, but you're not denying them as part of like the sound. It's right. It's almost hard to not include them. When and then you move that, we're using references from 20 years ago even,
right.
But you move that dial and it's like, look, there's someone who could deny Code Orange in their current state as being a hardcore band or being relevant, and like those are all fine conversations, etc. Not for now, not for this conversation. But what I do want to say is like, yo, Code Orange, I Am King is undeniable in that when you go back for the 10 years between 2010 and 2020, not only was it a very popular record, it was a very influential record, and we are still feeling it now.
Absolutely.
And the same can be said for Turnstile, and the same can be said for Power Trip, and the same can be said for Incendiary and all these things. And you trace back those roots out, and we just have this really broad dearth of sound. So now, of course, the current wave of bands is going to have a really broad range of sounds coming out. And it's kind of fascinating to see how in relatively how quickly that has moved, for better or worse. You know, Patrick, chime in here as the resident who is out there in the streets.
Well, I'm going to say I'm being eaten alive by mosquitoes in a public park in Orlando. I am. I'm going to say that. Here's why I'm not fully on board. I was sold by your premise to start, but here's my pushback. I haven't seen enough young people bands occupy that space. What we're seeing a number of like, you know, hardcore success, relative success. This is still small bands we're talking about. That from the older fellas. And when I say older fellas, I mean like 35 plus. So we're talking about Angel Dust, Drug Church, Fiddlehead, Turnstile. So, like, these aren't necessarily young men. You know what I mean? Like, that we're talking
about.
Well,
let me give you one under the age range. No Pressure.
Sure.
Which Tom mentioned.
Yes.
Could have been considered a pop punk band, however, by a lot of people. However, they play squarely in hardcore shows and self-identify as such.
Okay, that's a good point. Here's what I would say. No Pressure could conceivably be a wave. I don't know. You know what I mean? It makes sense that it would be. Those shows are popping off. But I just don't know yet, because this is seemingly the march of time, is that Pat Flynn was in Have Heart. Then he was in a number of bands that were like very intentionally niche. And then, which we don't talk about enough. Maybe we've mentioned it once or twice. That's to his credit as an artist. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't interested in chasing the big thing time and time again. You know what I mean? So, you do the thing that is interesting to you for a number of years, and then you find a thing that is melodic, often post-hardcore. Your roots are very clearly on your sleeve, but it is a different thing.
Let's pause real quick, and just because in the spirit of any episode could be someone's first. For anyone out there who has heard Fiddlehead and enjoys Fiddlehead, you should give some time and attention to Pat's band Sweet Jesus, which is not the same and not close. However, if you like how raw and emotional and kind of pulling that Fiddlehead can be, Sweet Jesus might hit those same notes. So, brief interlude. Please continue. Sorry for interrupting.
No sweat. And that's a fact. So, the way that this has always gone is you have your Walters and then you have your dude from Phobia. And this is on the extreme end of things. You have the person that is pursuing a different sound. Some people might write it off. I mean, look, when I was a young dude going to hardcore shows, I didn't have time for Quicksand. I barely had time for Fugazi. You know what I mean? And yep. And Fugazi made it in on a technicality, because Minor Threat's like my favorite band. You know what I mean? So, like, technicality that was open to Fugazi. The point is, you've got that artist usually who is on the fringe of hardcore, if they can even be considered hardcore. And then you have the kind of elder statesman who doubles down on the sound that they popularized or they helped a pioneer or you know what I'm saying? Like,
I do. And I'm going to prove my point by asking you a question based on your statement. What band, young or old, would you say is on the fringe of hardcore sonically at this point?
If your point is to illustrate that any answer I give, you could probably nudge just slightly in, and it would be squarely into what people think as hardcore.
Well, it is, but it also is that I have a hard time, and please chime in. I have a hard time picking out that fringe band, other than bands like, look, I used Code Orange. They're clearly pushing into a different place and want to be in a different place. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a band who people would go, that's not hardcore. And I'm not talking about some old fuddy-duddy. I'm talking about someone who's active, who's listening to this podcast and cares about the music that's going on right now. I think it would be really hard. Like, Tom, do you have any bands you go, yo, their sound is kind of on the fringe outside of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, I there's a million fuddy-duddies that are like, you know, fucking Turnstile's not hardcore. But we're not talking about them. The one band that and this could be my own ignorance, and I don't even know if you're that familiar with them. Pat might be, because, you know, Pat's a Pitchfork reader. That band, The Armed. I think I listened to it once and I was like, I'm cool. But, like, people that whose opinions I respect think it's like the greatest thing ever. But I think it's hardcore in vibe more than sound.
Oh, I could be crazy. Oh, I got one. The armed, show me the body. These are acts that.
Okay, there you go. That's the edge. Yeah, right. Show me the body. But as we've discussed, we have mutuals who will be like, no, show me the body's the most exciting and best hardcore band going right now.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's a number of people that feel like they are pioneering something. You know what I mean? And I mean, perhaps, you know what I mean? I don't know what the future holds, but I to me, that's like maybe on the outer. Yeah, I would consider that the outer fringe, but I also.
And I think I would too. And Tom, great identification.
But here's the thing. I am really hesitant to describe Drug Church as anything but the outer fringe. Do you know what I mean?
I think, yo, here's the thing. There was a long time, and it's, you know, we put you in an unfair position to discuss this sometimes, but you roll with it, so appreciate it. I think there was a time where it was like very clear that Drug Church was on the outer fringe in terms of hardcore. But it doesn't feel like you've moved towards hardcore. Rather, hardcore has moved towards you.
Okay, that is a thesis that I can support with data. So
correct.
Yes. I would say that at least a third of the people attending our shows are dyed-in-the-wool hardcore kids wearing, be-all, end-all shirts. You know what
I'm saying? Well, like, and I think, here's my thing. I think that what a hardcore kid is, and it always changes, you know, like, look, if you took a kid, if you took a fucking skin rolling out of CBGB's in 85, he fell into a time vortex and was dropped on the sidewalk outside CB's in 93. He'd look around and go, who the hell are these kids? Oh, they're hardcore kids. Nah, they ain't.
Yeah.
Fast forward, same course, thing, sure. 7 years, same thing. Fast forward 7 years, same thing. So I think.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
That is kind of like where my thesis begins. And I think we're going to see it prove itself out in the sound. I think we're seeing a lot of varied sounds, even in subgenres. Like, you guys can speak to this more than me, but from what I see on the more metallic side, on the more metallic hardcore and metalcore side, there is the blooming of all different types of flowers effect. There's all different types of bands going for different styles, and there's some commingling and intermixing, but it's all gravy. You know what I mean? It doesn't seem like anybody's who like, well, I like Dying Wish, but you know, F Wrist Meets Razor, or like, but Knocked Loose. Ugh, yuck. You know what I mean? It seems like there's a real openness. And then on the less metallic stuff, it's ranging from way more melodic to almost what would have felt like that, Tom, that we've discussed, the like Far Side, Game Face, indie alt for hardcore right. kids world. But that's right. now almost like those bands hardcore. Play just straight up. Yeah, right.
Right. Like that was for like Sensefield was for like Pearl Jam for hardcore kids because you couldn't yeah. wear a Pearl Jam shirt to a fucking, you know, a Madball show.
Yeah.
But like you can
get away with Sensefield.
Because it's got the Rev Star, so you're cool.
Yeah.
But like
yeah,
now that's yeah. like, that's a center line.
Yes. Yes. And I think we're seeing a lot of bands who dwell. I mean, friend of the podcast and a label we all think is pretty cool, NMZ. Look at his catalog. Oh, he's yeah. Nick's doing a lot of really cool stuff and a lot of diverse stuff. And I would hesitate to call any of his stuff not hardcore.
But very few, of very little of it is in the middle of hard, like
yeah,
basketball hardcore. You know, like, yeah.
yeah, like end on end
is yeah.
super. Like there's his fast hardcore like fastball. But then you know what's the new thing he did? A Sky So Black. Is that one? That's one of the new ones.
Yeah,
Prize Wars.
You know? Yeah, he puts out a lot of stuff. Yeah, I yell at him. I go, I can't keep up.
But there's a lot of different things going on, and I think we're kind of seeing that. So that was based on this conversation I had with a friend, and I thought it was one of those conversations that stuck in my gnaw because I couldn't unthink it. I was like, yeah, maybe we were wrong, not in that, you know, there wouldn't be more melodic stuff, blah, 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 but more that the hardcore adjacent, it was a separate thing, but it was the next evolution of where all this is going. And I certainly wouldn't have predicted that. And maybe I'm wrong right now, but I kind of don't think I am. And I think we're going to see more of this. Like, we're more likely. All right. Question for both of you. Are we more likely to see bands who want to sound like Drug Church over the next 3 years, or see a rebirth of bands who want to sound like the early Rev Catalog in the next 3 years?
Drug Church.
Here's the only reason I'm hesitant to say that is
because you're the singer of Drug Church.
Yeah. No, it's humility, just, you know.
And, no, it's not just that. It's also, Bob, here's now past, as they say, we've talked about this in finance, past performance, no indicator of future results. But so, you know, I hate to bring up like a, it's just what you sound like to a degree is if somebody was really excited about Quicksand, Orange Nine, that scene.
Or saying this is then, the next. No, good point.
So
what happened right after that was Rebirth of Hardcore Pride. And let me just be clear. That got an entire wave of kids into hardcore, including me.
That's what I'm saying. Like, going back to it, it often goes back to base. Now, here's the real question to me is what is going back to base. Obviously, base changes just slightly with every generation. So is anybody going to go back to the negative approach? They barely do now. You know,
well, they barely do now. But here's the one thing I'll say. And shout out to the Big Takeover. We're seeing that there's a big punk festival out in L.A. There's the big punk festival in Philly that I'm excited to go to. There's been a huge resurgence in the punk hardcore side of things. You know, I think we're going to see, you know, we've talked a little bit about some of the stuff you see out there. I'm real stoked on the new Ammo LP. Everybody should check that out. New Jersey band who I think is just awesome. But like, there's been a big rise on that. We see it in some of the bands who are catching energy right now. Gel and Spy are doing really well. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of bands. But that stuff's been doing well and kind of is branching it into its own world. Obviously, the more metallic stuff, like thrash metal style, Enforce, we big up. Gatecreeper's doing their thing. They're doing really well. We're seeing all that stuff kind of like Black Shirt stuff is doing fine. But I'm talking about the lighter shades of the spectrum. The gray t-shirt might be retired because right now it's been replaced with you know, pastels.
You know, I'm going to develop my hypothesis on black t-shirts development because it's not fully formed, but the way that you mentioning Spy and Gel. And so I watched a Gel set the other day on probably Hate 5-6. And so I was watching that. And I was thinking, oh, this band has like proper punk riffs. You know what I mean? Like not necessarily hardcore riffs. There's some proper punk riffing in here, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
And then I thought about, because obviously Scowl is a big thing right now, right? People want and people want my opinion on stuff, which is always a setup. People, I know what you're asking me when you ask me about what's popping. You know what I mean? You want me to say, nah, that's not popping.
Don't mind me just watching. Yeah.
Like you, I know where you're coming from. You want me to low hate on something. But I haven't seen Scowl live, but I watched a video of a couple songs, and I was thinking the same thing about that band. Oh, that band, he's got some proper punk riffs. Now it's a slightly different thing. They're going for like, you know, whatever, like the same material that Ceremony ends up mining. You know what I mean? California.
They have some of that. They also do some like skank part mosh. So,
Yes.
Bass breaks for sure.
For sure. But and this is, I could be totally wrong about this. I expect that to minimize over the next record. You know what I mean? Like, I could be wrong. I don't write the records for them, but I think that their California stuff really works, and the mosh stuff is mosh stuff. You know what I'm saying? So I
don't lose your hypothesis, but pin in the idea of an episode where we do projections and futures on what we think band's next record should sound like. Based on nothing but our pure weirdo speculation. Continue.
So I was thinking, and Spy is another good example, right? Spy certainly has some fucking punk riffs. Maybe more than the other two bands, they have like the grimy punk riff. You know what I mean? Like, so whatever. The point is,
grime punk into stomp punk. Yeah.
Yes. But the point is that I, in the same way that maybe on a timeline, like things sort of gravitate towards the post-hardcore or alt or melodic hardcore, whatever that thing is that we're talking about, I think even kind of the black shirt bands are, in my view, highly melodic. They have highly melodic underpinnings that I think that they are going to pursue in a similar fashion. So I think that even black shirt is going to become, you know, Heather gray shirt over the next 3 years. So it's, and listen, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe these bands all get harder over time. That's possible. I'm game for anything, but I just think that even the punk stuff that we're talking about, I think that stuff might be on a trajectory towards, for lack of a better word, is immediately likable. Okay. Like what do we want to call that?
I actually want to give shout out to Gel, because I think on that last EP they did, Violent Closure, they achieved something that's really tough as a fast hardcore punk band, who's pretty hard and has like punk underpinnings, but then like stompier mosh stuff. They have catchy parts. They have parts that you could use a snippet of, you know, like I saw some skate video that had just a snippet of a Gel song, like an Instagram thing, and it used a Gel song. And I'm like, yo, this works. This is cool. It sounds cool. You use the word instantly likable. I think that's right. And like, that is the few and far between, which I don't think that's a demarcation of bad. That's actually this like high watermark for fast hardcore, you know, like if you're a poppy or a melodic band, catchy stuff. I think you said it a few episodes ago, and I've kind of appreciated it. Writing a catchy chorus, you know, is one of the hardest things you can do.
Well, 100%. But here's what I'm driving at. Like, and Tom, I'm going to speak for you, but maybe you don't fall into this. I think to Tom and I, this is Hank Wood / Warthog sort of world, right? And
yes.
Yep.
I don't expect Warthog to become immediately likable. But the younger crop of bands, I kind of think are going to, listen, to those bands that are listening to this, that one of your friends told you, hey, they're talking about you, whatever. Let me just be clear. I don't write your music fucking for you. I'm just telling you that the parts of your songs that work best for me are the parts that are like proper, fun, punk parts. And if I were you, I would write those parts bigger every song. So, but I don't write your music. So make yourself happy. But but what I'm saying is, I think that stuff, in my view, I think that even that stuff is going to go likable, which sounds like a fucking insult. When you're like trying to be the black shirt punk band, and I'm like, yeah, they're all going to be likable. It probably sounds like I'm like shitting on them in some way, but I'm not. I think that those are like, you know, like I'm the guy that thinks that the Mid-Period Ceremony stuff is actually brilliant. You know what I mean? Like I'll take it over the Power Violence Inspired stuff any day. So like, I'm not, and here's my premise actually. Let me put it in a nutshell. I bet moving forward, forget bands wanting to sound like Drug Church or something like that. I think moving forward, mid-period ceremony is going to mean a lot more to people than early ceremony. Does that sound viable as a hypothesis to you?
I mean, I think you've got a bigger idea in there and you kind of checked yourself a bit, I think you should, maybe we're going to have to ask you to come back to your bigger black shirt hypothesis, if it's today or next episode. No, I think people, am I wrong in saying that like there are people who love the ceremony early material, but it's almost a point of like the ferociousness, the rawness. And then if you were there live, it was that crazy that it's like, damn. And it was infectious live. Mid period, they clearly just got better chops and were synthesizing classic punk tunes with some of that more up tempo and like teeth of the time, you know?
But that material, now Ceremony, we forget, is a long-lived band. So like they actually have seen at least two generations of hardcore kids, right?
Maybe closer to four, you know?
And what I'm saying is, I just think that the influence moving forward is going to be Zoo. Do you know what I mean? I think that's going to be the influence on younger bands, much more so than... But look, like this is also a natural progression. How many actual alt bands, dyed-in-the-wool alt bands, started as hardcore leaning material? You know what I mean?
Oh,
100%. A lot. And that's because when you're young, you can jump into hardcore. There's a scene for it. This is what you're around all the time. And you have to, as an adult, now I'm getting heavy. As an adult, you almost have to make a conscious decision to play hardcore. Whereas when you're young, it could be just what you're around and in, you know?
Tom, what are your thoughts on the first wave, like first wave hardcore bands? We always talk, you know, Negative Approach, Minor Threat, what they all did then after that is always interesting to me. But like, clearly I like their bands before that more. But where they went after that, you see Husker Du, their hardcore stuff is good, but then they go and continue progressing and they're in a different world. You get Fugazi, you get Laughing Hyenas, you get all this stuff. And you know, you get Dinosaur Jr., all that stuff. They didn't consider their next projects hardcore per se, but some did. You know, like I think Ian MacKay would say that Fugazi was clearly a hardcore band. And I wouldn't argue with him. Is that sort of akin to what we're seeing sonically in terms of the range, where it's like, hey, if we walk like a duck and talk like a duck, but we have a different haircut and, you know, we're now fluorescent pink, are we still a duck?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fucking $1 million question.
Right.
There's bands that it's like, I just read like an interview with, I'll put it out there. I'm not trying to be mean. Killswitch Engage.
Yes.
Really like the dudes in the band. I quite like the band. Yeah. I read an interview with the guy and he was just like, you know, no matter what we do, we're always a hardcore band.
Citation needed, my friend.
But you know, like to him, he's a fucking hardcore kid in a band. He's going about it as if they were still playing, like, you know, like whatever the fucking, you know, Lupo is a fucking Met or whatever. You know what I mean? In Rhode Island.
Sure. Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're like an almost near like arena level. But like to him, he's still like they're a hardcore band that just happened to get big.
So, Tom, not to make everything about me, but like this is why I'm like super reticent to have that whole like to talk about Drug Church as though it's a hardcore band, even a very fringy hardcore band. I've usually kind of demurred from that and said like alt band or whatever.
It's because you're not an alt band.
I listen.
The vibe, all right, Pat, I'm going to tell you as an outsider.
Okay.
The vibe that you bring to the those shows are as punk or as hardcore as any show I've ever seen. And I like alt. Bob Mould isn't being like, you with the big shoulders, you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to be the person that people are landing on from stage dives.
Okay, that's all true.
Like all the alt bands that I like, they're not like kind of, and you know, being like, have the best night of your life. Like you're like Andrew WK yeah. for hardcore.
And by the way, stage diving at drug church shows, mixed quality level. We'll say that.
Yeah, definitely. No doubt about that.
Here's the thing: at an alt show. You guys know that one, I think is it Alive, the Pearl Jam video? I don't, or is it, it's one of the Pearl Jam videos where Eddie Vedder
climbs
the side. Even Flow, thank you, Tom. That's the Eddie Vedder stage dive, and it's like, he just like falls, you know?
It's not even a dive, it's just a...
It's not, it's a trust fall, you know what I mean? That's stage, alt show stage dive. Person jumps on the stage, does the hands waving like, hey, catch me.
Yeah,
and then jumping. You don't get that. You've got full-fledged stage divers. That's a little check on the hardcore box. You know what I mean?
Sure, but here's my point. Is Randy from Lamb of God has the same line that the guy from Killswitch has got. And I respect both these men, even if I don't listen to their bands at all. Seem like cool dudes, whatever. I'm just saying that I am always hesitant to because... It's easy to come off like when you are not playing hardcore music, but you are talking about hardcore, like and you're talking about you playing hardcore music, you can come off away unintentionally.
But someone like Randy or someone like Jesse, right? From what benefit are they getting out of it by like tethering themselves to hardcore?
So Tom. This is not to make a comparison that perhaps those gentlemen would find unflattering, but I've never seen anybody more insecure about their punk bona fides than fucking Billy Joe Armstrong. Never in my life. That man is from the dirt. You know what I mean? Like that man, he shouldn't have to prove himself to anybody.
He's Pasalacqua.
Right. Yeah. But he... I think because of the scene that he came from specifically and some of the anxieties that they got over there, that he has been trying to prove that he's a punk while playing stadiums with the bottled water. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's different. Yes. So, but he's hung up on it. And I don't know Jesse and I don't know Randy. I'm just saying that there is like, for a lot of people, maintaining your roots is an unhealthy fixation when you could just say, I really love hardcore music. You know what I mean? Like you could just say like, yeah, like you don't gotta do the whole thing. You can just say like, and you know, if somebody presses you, like if an interviewer presses you on these things, you can always just say, I mean, I'm not the one to say, cause I'm not watching myself, but I would have to imagine that stuff has a real impact on my performance and how I view my relationship with the audience. That stuff is all, that's a way of saying the same thing without coming off away. Does that make sense?
You're right about the whole like, yeah, Billy Joe Armstrong being like, yo dude, you were there, you were a Gilman from the you opened the door.
So I actually have two things, but the one I want to save towards the end, but the other being exactly what you're saying, like the I just really like hardcore music.
Or I consider myself a hardcore kid.
Okay. I think those are two different things, though.
Yeah, no, that's true.
I think that's been a big change that we're starting to see. And I don't say this in a negative way. I think it's interesting. You know, as a wise man once said, I used to think of labels as symbols of pride, yada, yada, yada.
The best part.
I know. yada, yada.
I mentioned the best. Yeah. Seinfeld, thank you.
By the way, Seinfeld in the hotel room. Another nice choice. So I believe with the broadening, and to be honest, there might be people who see identifying as anything as being not cringy, but it's maybe gauche. Cringy. It's, yeah, gauche. It's gauche. Thank you. Passé. Prestige, yeah. Right? Yeah, passé. There we go. And that can get hardcore into some trouble because the ideology and just labeling, like, well, this is hardcore, not that. Yo, like, this is Boston, not LA. It's the statement of that was a declaration, hey, this is us and this is our own sound, not that, not the Golden Voice punk, not that. We're this. That flag planting has been really important in hardcore. Without it, another big question, guys, is hardcore just the minor leagues for big room metal, big room alt festival stages? And I say this because it only hasn't been in the past because of self-declaration. Am I right or wrong?
Okay. So I'm going to say no with a couple of caveats. I think no. And I can compare this to comic books. There is a person who is very obviously angling for a specific type of career in comic books. Big two work, et cetera, right? Marvel, DC.
Sure. Yes.
And even their indie work seems to be on that pathway.
Sure.
And their indie work can be seen as, oh, this is like the band that is waiting for the, you know, for the tap on the shoulder, you know? But then there are also people who spend their entire career pursuing just exactly the type of indie work that they want, and with no expectations and or no plan for that other thing. And that person persists, and obviously in hardcore I think it also persists. However, I will say that on a long enough timeline,
yes,
most bands that I've met in hardcore music would like to graduate to at least a bigger stage. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean a different type of music. That doesn't necessarily mean that they want to shed all their fans, whatever the fuck. It's just,
right.
If you do something,
there's lines. Yes.
If you do something long enough, also, like, listen, there's bands that I know who I guess you could say were punk or hardcore bands in some respect. And when they break up, the members go, yeah, I'm done. And you go, you don't want to do it anymore? And they go, I can't start at zero. You know what I mean? And that seems, if you're listening to this and you're 23, and that sounds stupid as fuck to you. You know what I mean?
It sounds dumb.
But if you are like 35 plus and the idea of going back to the VFW is a turnoff, well, listen, I'm sure I'll play a VFW again in the not distant future. So I'm not, I'm not on your side, but I am, I can understand, right? That's not me, but I can understand. And I think that this type of like, what do you call it? Mission creep? You know what I mean? The mission started as we're a punk band. We're going to play punk music and it's not going to go anywhere. And it's fun and it's fulfilling. And then you've done it for 4 years. Now you'd kind of like to be invited to the bigger shows. You feel like you kind of deserve it. You're better than the other bands locally. Why the fuck wouldn't you get invited? Oh, now you get invited to those shows. You do a little regional touring. You know, our regional tours are pretty successful. I don't see why we're not getting invited to the festival. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
okay.
Well, but it's different, too. I want to say this. Let me give a comparison point. Patrick, when you were in high school doing bands, were there people who were completely removed from hardcore doing aggressive guitar bands?
Yes.
What were their aims and goals?
Pantera.
And there, which you've also self-admitted that members of your band were kind of like,
yeah, 100%.
But your goal was to play like hardcore shows, right?
Yes. But Bob, you're raising a question that is like, I'd be interested to hear Tom's on this because he started a band in high school. You're talking about something that it's almost impossible to, I mean, it is literally impossible for me as a person with no objectivity on this, but is that just because that was the scope of my ambition?
Well, that's the perfect question. Tom, with Indecision, was your goal with Indecision ever, you love U2, was your goal with Indecision ever to be like, man, it'd be nice to do a U2 tour?
No, we had none. We had no ideas.
No. And your goal was probably like, yeah, if we went and did a tour, it'd be cool. Like, hey, if Madball asked us to go on tour, that'd be awesome.
Right. Or to be to play with our heroes or like put out a 7-inch or like play outside of Brooklyn, you know, like we had
like hardcore perhaps. And like, I'm saying this is all part of the larger ball of wax. There was a self-limiting idea to it in so much as saying that hardcore is enough. Being a part of this thing is enough. However, I think, you know, and you identified it, sometimes ambitions grow and it's okay. Like, yo, by Most Precious Blood, and Tom, certainly after you were out of Most Precious Blood, like, if those dudes were like, yo, Linkin Park just asked us to go on tour, they probably are going, fuck yeah, right?
Oh, I mean, dude, they did. Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when they were like, Gravedigger asked us for a new sound, so like a song when they come out and crush cars.
right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they did, you know, we did Andrew WK tours. They did like AFI tours and Rise Against tours. And, you know, that's cool. But it was all coming from hardcore.
Right. Now that's when it's like the question being, and it's just something to think about more so is the idea of like, and it's hard because like we also say this, like, yo, Turnstile, I legitimately think Turnstile has the potential to be one of the biggest guitar bands in the world, period. Just crossed 1 million monthly listeners. Yo, is that close to, you know, Ed Sheeran numbers? Not even close. Come on. What are we talking about? But on the like, on the scale of hardcore, that's crazy.
Yeah,
and I mean, I'm all for it, and I'm excited for those folks, and I'm excited for what they've done, and I'm a fan of the band. I think the record's great, but I also wonder how that attunes and lines up with ambitions of younger people, and how that framing of this weird subculture that's been around for 40 plus now continues to evolve at the same time.
Do you think it like skews people's, you know, it makes them go like, we could do that. Like, while, you know, like Pacabi and Indecision, that was not a thing. Like, think of it all, like the biggest thing you could ever, 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 ever imagine in hardcore.
That's exactly right.
Sick of It All is more attainable than Turnstile is attainable in 2022.
No question.
Yeah, although Tom, when I was a kid and I saw Sick of It All, I don't know if I really thought that I could do exactly. I thought I could do the local version of it, maybe.
Yeah, no, I mean, of course.
So do you see what I mean? Is that the idea of the, like, there's a self-limiting element there that's almost like, yo, it's the rejection of these things, X, Y, and Z, but it also means your ceiling is only X, but you're like, yo, both of you would have been outrageously excited to have the ceiling of Sick of It All 1995. Like, you'd incredible, you know?
Fuck yeah.
But now you're right. Like, the ceiling of Turnstile is pretty goddamn crazy.
Yeah, and maybe we talked about it on the expectations episode where, I don't know if I mentioned it, but Faith No More, fascinating to see that they never wanted to be a big band. And they just became a big band. Do you know what I'm saying? Like that's yep. Turnstile feels the same way to me. Now we can look at Turnstile and say those are sort of abnormally focused individuals who are very good at a thing, you know,
and who let's also put it, worked hard at a thing for over a decade,
for sure. But I don't know if you would ever look at them and go, yeah, they had Rio on their mind. Do you know what I mean?
The kid from Trapped Under Ice, the drummer from Trapped Under Ice. I know why he's starting this band.
Yeah. It's to play in a major stadium in Rio.
But while that was like a spoken thing, like bands that are huge now or have been huge in the last 15 years that like started in hardcore, like they were very clear about like what their intentions were.
Yeah.
You know, like certain bands from Chicago that are incredibly, incredibly, incredibly popular. Your mom, everyone's mom will know the bassist probably.
Sure.
But like we would play with pretty much that band when they were a hardcore band. Mm-hmm. And like, they were like, yeah, we're just going to like start this band for like, you know, try to make money and like, you know, find girlfriends and stuff.
Yep.
And it was like, really? I mean, I remember like, I don't know, like Pat might be old enough. Like, I remember like, wait a minute. Are you telling me that Chad is leaving Shai Hulud to be in a pop punk band? The fuck is wrong with this kid?
It seemed remarkable to me. He had like a real voice too.
You know what I mean? We're like, what is wrong with this dude? He's got it made. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, that was a thought.
To play bass in a pop punk band. Right.
Yes. That's actually a very funny example.
I'm sorry.
Do you remember that though? Like, I remember being like, dude, what are you doing? Because I met him. We played their first show with him singing in Miami. Yeah. And he was in eighth grade. And I'm like, this kid's voice is insane. And like a couple years later, I'm like, you're leaving Shai Hulud for something called A Newfound Glory? Like, what are we doing here, buddy? Like, do you realize how good you have it with Shai Hulud? Because Shai Hulud was killing it.
Yes, they were. Listen, like, yeah. It's funny how little vision you and I have.
Oh, dude, if I was like, I always think like the times that I've been like, you know, I would have pulled Chad aside and been like, what are you doing? What are you're ruining your life. A friend of mine that some of you guys probably know, like was kind of involved in signing Taking Back Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I remember being like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, what? I think it'll be good. I'm like, this band is fucking terrible.
I had the actual opposite. I had the opposite experience where I advised a friend to sign to Victory because all of my favorite bands were on Victory. You know what I mean?
The opposite. Like, I was like, this dude, you got to put your neck on the line for this band. Like the demo wasn't that great. Then they became fucking incredible. But like at the time I was like, this ain't going to go anywhere.
Yeah,
like that's why don't sign with my management company, my record company, because I like what I like and I go, this is garbage. And then I remember being like, dude, what are you doing? Or even like the dude Joe. I mean, I was talking about Fallout Boy before, but like, and I was like, in my head, I'm like, that sounds ridiculous. Meanwhile, I should have been like, you want me to carry something?
Yeah. Remember me, please.
You know, quite honestly, and this is totally not a fucking whatever, but like, and they do. I mean, not with money.
Yeah.
But I mean, I see them 20 years later and they're still like, hey, hardcore. You know, like they know, like they're still in their hardcore kind of bag.
There's dudes like famously Davey Havoc is still very much likes what he likes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's fellas that have kind of entered the different part of musical life.
There's like a cutoff that you're like, if you join their lives after a certain point, they look at you a certain way.
Oh, well, that's a fact.
But if you jumped on the band, that's why me and Bob are trying to get on that drug church bandwagon early. So like 10 years from now, they'd be like, those fellas, like when I'm trying to retire and you're like, yo, I'll hit you off with a mill. But let me pay off the school loans for you. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I feel. That's what I'm waiting for.
I think maybe I told you fellas, I got my first email about a white paper. I'm really excited to enter the stage of life where like people that are successful are fans of my bands. That's really nice. So
when did you get an email about white paper?
a white paper. So it's a simplification of a usual tech, usually a tech idea. It doesn't have to be a tech idea, but usually a tech idea. A white paper is like the, hey, here's the synopsis that we could show to an investor or an executive or anybody who doesn't have technical knowledge of the thing we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
In an effort to make them understand. But it's basically, it's like if you were, like, for example, this is not what happened to me, but like, for example, when the AIDS drug guy, whatever the fuck his name is, like when he approached Jeff Rickley or, you know what I mean? Like it was on
Martin Shkreli. Yes.
Yeah, Martin Shkreli. Thank you. When it was on, that was on some like, hey, I became successful and I just really still like your band sort of shit. Like now, that one maybe didn't go the way that.
No, that didn't go well at all.
but you get the point. The point is that you know, like it's
rich people cool. Like your band now is what you're saying.
Yeah. Like that. Or
yeah,
people,
it's cool.
Like people that are becoming rich, right? Like, you know, like that's a cool thing.
You know, I think PK has to get to his gig before we go. A big shout out to Red Planet Blues, your new comic. Looks like it's funded, but people should look it up. Red Planet Blues. Who's the artist on it? Al Goffa?
Al Goffa. Everybody go to the Kickstarter, Red Planet Blues. It is, if you like my comic work at all, or if you have any interest in just the way that I write, you'll enjoy it. The cartooning is awesome. Just really, really sharp, just really on point. And, this is Bob doing me the favor of cross promoting the thing that I definitely would have forgotten. The thing is, the book is funded, but we set a very low funding goal because we're just treating it like a pre-order. So just get your pre-order in now. You'll get it in a few months.
I like that. Yo. And then when we're back on, like when everyone's on microphones.
Yeah.
Me and Pat are playing the same show in September.
Oh, that's right.
I would love to talk about that and kind of give some background.
Book Axe to Grind. Let's go.
They want to. So if you're listening and you want Axe to Grind to, like, we've got a very, very, a buddy of mine that's like sort of involved was like, you guys should come down and just do, like, you know, you and Pat are going to be there. I am more than happy to do a live, you know, we just got to get Bob down to Birmingham, Alabama.
Let's do it. Give me some boiled peanuts. Let's go.
And and then do you, are we putting this up this coming Tuesday?
Yeah.
Barring any editing problems, yes.
All right.
This one might have to go to Andrew though. This might be some heavy lifting. We'll find out.
Just keep an eye out on the GoFundMe for Homeboy from Down Presser.
Oh,
shout out to Dan Weinrob.
That
person. So.
Terrible story. Hopefully, you know, just married. And yeah.
A thing to speak to all of that, a part that everybody needs to remember, a thing that could happen to anybody. That part, like for those of you that care about how somebody gets hurt, a thing that could happen to anybody. So you got to keep that in mind. Like if you're the sort of person, and this is for our listeners that are more judgmental. If you're the sort of person that writes people off because you think they get themselves in trouble or whatever, you don't want to fucking contribute to them. This could happen to anybody. So bear that in mind. Give what you can.
Shout out to Dan, who's not just a good person, but a great person. Support him. Everybody, thank you. Enjoy the Pit Reports. Let's go.
Hello, this is Matt. I'm calling about the Boston show featuring Drug Church, One Step Closer, Lurk, Soul Blind, and Pile of Love. It is a couple of weeks in the past now. I just made a note to make sure I called in just to say that Pile of Love was pretty dope. They covered Guided by Voices. I think it's a couple of dudes from Drug Church and then a couple of other folks that have been involved in a bunch of different things. They were telling me, I don't recall the whole story, but kind of like if the Juliana Theory like did a push-up or two. I don't know, like definitely some more meat to it, but also the dude could sing a little, and my wife Courtney agrees, so yeah. The rest of the show, you already know. Lurk, good. Soul Blind, fucking great. One Step Closer, fucking great. And Drug Church, you know, that's the tour, right? Although One Step Closer, they're bringing it. They're bringing it. That's all I'll say. But besides that, check it if it's still going on. If not, thanks for having me. So long, guys.
What's up, Axe to Grind enjoyers? It's Jim from Ohio sending in a pit report. Last night, I went and saw the Knock Loose Movements Kublai Khan and Koyo package at the Athenaeum in Columbus, Ohio. Really cool room. It was my first time being there. I have it pegged at about a 1200 cap. It's a super old school theater, kind of ballroom deal with really good acoustics and some theater seating for old heads like me to rest our feet. And it really knocked me on my ass, the entire thing. It was my first time seeing Koyo, long awaited. This band, you gotta check them out if you haven't yet. They are absolutely bringing it live. They played the two new songs that they dropped recently, a couple songs off each EP. Band just moves on stage, super dynamic. Joey is just very clearly on the warpath. He was shirtless most of the time and just really, really going off, having a great time. And people really popped for them. So it's nice seeing them really get their flowers. I've been riding hard for Koyo from jump. So I think that they're going to be really big after this tour, as if they aren't already. Next was Kublai Khan from Texas. My second time seeing them, I saw them open for Despised Icon back in 2019, and really, really, really impressive. If you haven't heard them, they're like playing a pretty unique kind of slammy, thuddy metalcore. Super fun, kept the crowd really engaged. Really kind of minimal setup, and they had really cool like neon little neon signs of 2Ks on the stage, which I thought was a nice touch. Really, really fun. Next up was Movements. It was a nice bill because they kind of split the difference between like really heavy metalcore and kind of, you know, more turn of the millennium style like emo pop punk stuff, which is kind of obviously the category that Koyo falls into. Movements definitely felt like a revival of the sort of Tumblr emo pop punk stuff that was happening in the like early 2010s. They were really, really well received. Very obviously have a really, really good, really solid following. They did a really like touching dedication to one of their fans from Columbus who had passed away recently, and so that's a somber moment to to punctuate the night. But honestly, they had one of the best crowd responses all night. So shout out Movements. And then obviously, like, there's not much to say that hasn't already been said about Knock Loose. They're the best band in the biz right now. If you're into, you know, very heavy metalcore. One of my buddies that I was there with turned to me at one point and was just like, "And these guys are basically just the heaviest band." And I was like, "Yeah, it's kind of accurate." They've really leveled up their stage show on this tour, and they have a really like cool sort of backdrop. And they're doing a thing that is, from where I sit, a page out of Slipknot's book, where they're actually like, they have the LED screens playing different, you know, cool footage in the background, and they particularly kicked that up for like the material off their newest EP. First time hearing the material off that Tearing the Fabric of Life EP live, and man, it was really impressive. The band knows how to put together a set list, and they know how to keep the crowd engaged. Isaac is a second only to Scott Vogel, I think, in terms of being an effective mosh call guy. And the crowd had one of the biggest pits open in it the entire time. And I think that if you have tickets to this, to any date of this tour, I would say go. Like, don't do what a lot of people have been doing and, like, sit it out if you can afford not to. Like, definitely check this out. I know that most of these dates are sold out, but I highly recommend checking this out. This is one of the most impressive things I've seen in a really long time. Without further ado, I'll sign off, but keep listening to Hardcore. Much love.
Hello, this is Matt. I'm calling about the Boston show featuring Drug Church, One Step Closer, Lurk, Soul Blind, and Pile of Love. It is a couple of weeks in the past now. I just made a note to make sure I called in just to say that Pile of Love was pretty dope. They covered Guided by Voices. I think it's a couple of dudes from Drug Church and then a couple of other folks that have been involved in a bunch of different things. They were telling me, I don't recall the whole story, but kind of like if the Juliana Theory like did a push-up or two. I don't know, like definitely some more meat to it, but also the dude could sing a little, and my wife Courtney agrees, so yeah. The rest of the show, you already know. Lurk, good. Soul Blind, fucking great. One Step Closer, fucking great. And Drug Church, you know, that's the tour, right? Although One Step Closer, they're bringing it. They're bringing it. That's all I'll say. But besides that, check it if it's still going on. If not, thanks for having me. So long, guys.